Hey, this is Rob, and when I'm not busy regulating the transmission rates of our public utilities, I'm stacking Benjamins. Yeah.
Live from the basement where we talk about a roundtable discussion and don't even own a round table, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. Everyone, I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and once again, these guys prove they're the masters of hyperbole. How can you have a roundtable discussion without, well, a round table? You think politicians are good? Well, maybe not this cycle, so let's rephrase that. You think politicians are double talkers? Luckily, today we've got some talent on this so-called roundtable discussion episode to save our reputation. From the Financial Time Traveler podcast, welcome Niall Bayer. Also, author of the hit book, Control Your Cash, available at Amazon and from controlyourcash.com, Greg McFarlane. In the fintech segment, how about a new portfolio management tool that separates your money into pies and then helps you diversify? Welcome from M1 Finance, Brian Barnes. And here he is, because what would a Friday be without a show host, Joe Saul Sehy?
In the first place, I'm not a natural blonde. I'm a show host, but more of a bald show host. Hey, everybody. I'm Joe Saul Sehy, Average Show Money on Twitter. And what a great show we have for you today. Greg McFarlane, Niall Bayer, and at the halfway point in our fintech segment, some phenomenal new stuff from M1 Finance. But before we get to all that, just got to say a big thanks to everybody who's gone to magnifymoney.com using our link, stackingbenjamins.com/magnifymoney. Because you know what you get when you get there? You find that you'll probably save about $450, because that's what everybody does when they put a better debt strategy together using Magnify Money. You know, you have all these credit cards at high interest rates. Why wouldn't you get a credit card that helps you pay your stuff off faster and have less money going to the man? StackyBenjamins.com/magnify money. Of course, I like the way that you do that. The first thing you do, by the way, is come up with a plan and then use tools like Magnify Money. Tell you what the wrong thing to do is, go look at Magnify Money, take out a new credit card, don't get rid of the old stuff, right? Or do a consolidation loan through Magnify Money, whatever it is. And surprise, surprise, guess what? You're in debt up to your ears. I used to see it all the time when I was a financial advisor. Start with your plan, then use great tools. And Magnify Money looks at more debt relief options than any other site on earth. 92% of the stuff out there. StackingBenjamins.com/magnify money. And you'll find that if it's student loans you're refinancing, if you use our link at StackingBenjamins.com/SoFi, that's SOFI, guess what you'll find? You'll find not only that SoFi gives you $100 if you use our link, refinancing those student loans and those personal loans has never been a lower interest rate with less fine print. Head to StackingBenjamins.com/SoFi. They also do mortgages, but it's against the rules for them to give you $100 for that. So you won't find it there. But if you're shopping, you should certainly shop there too. All right. Fantastic show today. Niall Bayer, Greg McFarlane at the halfway point. In these fintech segments at the middle, going to remind everybody of this. We don't endorse any of the fintech on the show. I just love hearing about all the great new technology coming out. And certainly we've got a great one out of Chicago for you today. So let's get this show going, shall we? All right, let's walk across the basement here and crank up my dad's shortwave, see if we can get the greatest minds in finance and also today podcasting, special podcasting guest with us. But let's start off in the city of Sin, Las Vegas, Nevada, where, Greg, are you sinning in the city of Sin tonight?
Tonight? I think I've already reached my quota for the day.
You're wondering about the statute of limitations before you answer, aren't you?
A lot of the commandments are pretty broad. I mean, we've all coveted our neighbor's wife at one point.
No comment. Let's ask our guest here if he's ever coveted his neighbor's wife. What an awkward way to introduce our guest from the brand new Financial Time. Let me introduce you, man, because we got to do the big, huge buildup from the Financial Time Traveler podcast. It's the one and only Niall Bayer. Welcome to the show, dude.
Thank you so much. And I only have one neighbor. She's a lot older than I am, but you know, Maybe if we're in Las Vegas, it would work out.
This is going downhill so fast.
Yeah.
Well, let's do this, guys. We got three great articles to talk about, and we're going to start off with this one from Lifehacker, written by our friend Kristen Wong. Kristen writes, "The money-saving habits I gave up because they waste my time." And it's funny, Mr. McFarland, that number one on here is clipping physical grocery coupons. I don't see you sitting at the McFarland Ranch clipping coupons.
I have a money-saving tip for Lifehacker's parent company, which is don't publish sex videos of Hulk Hogan. Oh,
probably not. Yeah, that might save him a little money. That's true.
That might save you $140 million or so. Yeah. Most financial bloggers, I can think of one in particular, have made a career out of getting people to save pennies or fractions of pennies or farthings, as our friends across the pond say it. One of my first heated debates on control your cash, and there were several dozen, was against someone who claimed that taking shorter showers saved her big cash. So we got into an argument on the definition of big, because I helpfully explained that water in the desert where I live, where it comes from an underground aquifer from an artificial lake 40 miles away, costs around, but you get 20 gallons for a penny.
Right.
I mean, it's not as if I turn my faucets and shower heads on and let them run all day just to prove a point, but this is not how you're going to save money. And you're not going to save money by clipping coupons. Paula, who I'm going to have to speak on behalf of because she's running around wearing nothing but mud up in Black Rock City, Nevada during Burning Man, is that you have to take into account the amount of time that you spend clipping the actual coupons. I can remember my mother doing this when I was a kid. She was religious with the newspaper inserts, 17 cents on Fleshman's margarine. And if you were making minimum wage, it cost you more than 17 cents worth of time to cut the damn coupon out in the first place.
Right. I love this now. It says there's easier ways to save $10 to $15 a week than sitting down and clipping coupons.
You know what's funny with me is that whenever I'm at the grocery store, I seem to always get behind the old lady who has 1,000 coupons to pull out of her pockets. And when I have three items, like I'm in the express aisle lane, and this lady has more coupons than she has items.
And she's paying with dimes, right?
Yes. Did you ever see the Simpsons episode with the Lonely Bachelor line at the supermarket?
No.
No.
It's the longest line, but it moves the fastest. It's all guys with like two or three items. They're all swiping their cards. No chit chat, no coupons, no digging into the purse for pennies, nothing.
That's like a great line I need to get into.
But the other thing here now is it says it leads you to buy stuff you wouldn't normally buy. 2003 study from NYU says you're going to buy a bunch of stuff if you clip coupons, which I think is true.
Mm-hmm. When you put a target on, I mean, you're already putting a goal on what you're saving for, and you've put a benchmark on how much you're willing to buy it for. It's only inevitable that you're going to go out and execute that decision. Once there's a psychological effect that happens when you've actually physically seen it occur and you've put in your own effort, it seems like it's inevitable to go and use that coupon for most reasons. Although I know my wife just keeps a drawer full of coupons for the big ticket items. And then the smaller stuff we just give up on. So it's like a 20% savings, maybe at Bed Bath & Beyond. We might use that if we bought, I don't know, a huge umbrella or something. That might save us a big ticket amount of money. But the smaller stuff, it's just not enough time in the day for me to nickel and dime it.
Yeah, let it go. She said instead she plans meals better. Do you and your wife do meal planning now?
We absolutely do meal planning, and it's more of an efficiency thing than a money-saving thing, to be honest with you. It just saves us time during the week because now we have three kids, just had a third one about a week and a half ago, which is awesome. But just thinking about the time that we have to spend on cooking dinners, we need to meal plan it out.
Yeah, Greg, you guys meal plan too, don't you?
I'm just trying to imagine what it would be like to have three kids running around my house. Congratulations.
Man, Greg doesn't have three cats running around his house, though.
That's the difference.
I have two cats. One of them died of chronic renal failure. Thank you for bringing that up, Joe.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just went to a dark place.
And they are pretty close to self-sufficient. They have not once crashed my car or crashed my girlfriend's car. They never asked for money. They've never stormed out of the house saying, I hate you. I never want to see you again. Clean up the occasional pile on a non-porous surface, but that's about it, really.
Why do you meal plan?
It's funny that you mentioned that, and I don't know how Joe knew that I planned meals, but it involves a bi-monthly or maybe quarterly run to Costco. As a matter of fact, this quarter's run was yesterday. Spent $680, and God, it felt good. And this is where having two freezers comes in handy. So, and now for the next 90 days, it's going to be okay. We're not going to be low on anything. It's just a case of taking it out and defrosting it. And then cooking. It's painlessly simple. There were no coupons involved. I don't even know if Costco accepts coupons. But to Niall's point, though, yeah, I'm only going to go out of my way to save on a big ticket item. If I have a $20 or $50 coupon, I'm trying to think of an example. Okay, I got a coupon in the mail a couple of weeks ago from the Capital Grill. For those of you who don't know, it is a nationwide chain of maybe a couple dozen of these fancy sort of upscale restaurants. $50 off? Yeah, sure, why not? And then we go there, and I did write a blog post about this a couple of years ago too. They bit me again. Yeah, let's go out for dinner, the two of us. And my girlfriend and I, neither one of us drink, and we've learned not to buy appetizers. And we still end up paying $110 minus $50, $60 with the coupon. And okay, this is great. We didn't have to cook. Was it worth the $60? Maybe. Would it have been worth $110? Hell no.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a necessity anyway.
Yeah. I like her advice there, meal plan, and it sounds like you guys do too. Her next point is searching for the best price on everything. Now she says, of course, if I buy a $900 laptop I'll presumably use for years, I'm going to look for a good price. Deal hunting serves a purpose, but I've spent way more time than I care to admit searching for, say, the best price on toilet paper via Amazon Subscribe and Save. Like, quit wasting all that time trying to save 37 cents. I guess this probably goes along with coupon clipping.
Absolutely. And it's all about efficiency for me with the coupon clipping and making sure I feel like I need to be extremely frugal on the things that aren't important to me. And then I will be extremely expensive on the things that do mean a lot to me. So for me, a computer laptop was something that is very important. As I travel a lot, I want to have something that has a solid state hard drive in it, so it starts right up. And so I'm going to spend a lot more money on that. But then at the same time, I don't really care about cars that much. And so I'm still driving a car that has over 200,000 miles on it because it's not as big of a deal to me. And some people look at me and they say, wow, you're extremely frugal in some areas, but then you'll spend a lot of money on a big ticket item that I never would have. And it's because I'm balancing out the two. And that's something that I've learned not only as, you know, on the investment side, but just kind of going through life and experience on how to save to be able to buy the things that I want and then cut back on the things that are just temporary happiness type of things.
I love her idea of just setting guidelines instead. And Greg, I want to skip down for you to this piece, looking exhaustively for travel deals. I know you travel quite a bit. Do you spend a ton of time searching for travel deals?
I won't define a ton, but I got to admit, I kind of do. Last month, I traveled around Western Europe and saved probably $400 on the flight from Vegas to Zurich by simply looking at what was available on Expedia and Kayak and competing sites and saying, okay, if I leave in the middle of the week, which isn't terribly convenient, then yeah, I can save $400. It probably took me less than an hour to search every site and to see what my American Express miles would get me and to check every individual airline site, Condor and British Airways, et cetera. So yeah, that was absolutely worth it. I mean, I didn't dedicate a week to it, but but an hour, and I probably could have gone a couple hours.
Yeah. You're not spending though a few days setting a bunch of reminders and watching prices forever. You're just looking for the best price now, buy it, get it done with.
The girlfriend jokes at me for creating spreadsheets for certain things, certain big ticket items that I want to buy. I had the most recent one was my latest vehicle purchase. And yeah, I had 20 columns and 30 rows comparing everything from price to engine size to foot pounds of torque and trying to figure out on a per mile basis, which was the best buy. Now I've got a vehicle that I only have to change the oil every 16,000 miles and it seats 7 and gets 25 diesel miles to a gallon. So I'm laughing at her.
Niall, I want to go back up in this article just a little bit for you, because just listening to your show, The Financial Time Traveler, it seems like you like technology and this idea. She says, using savings apps that require too much work. She's over those. Do you use a lot of apps in your financial planning?
I've trimmed down a lot. I definitely love the usage of apps. There's a lot of great fintech apps that are rolling out where you can invest your spare change, like Acorns, for instance. They've started to segment out a lot of the technology that's going into the app world. So you have your budgeting apps, and then you have your investment apps, and then they're kind of convoluting the two, where there's some that do the budgeting and the investing by linking your bank accounts. I feel like it can get over the top with me. I wrote a blog post about it, so I immediately had like 30 different finance apps on my phone, and it was way too much overkill. So I've definitely gone through my fair share to find the ones that work, but mostly it's just like a checkup where it'll give me a graph really quickly on exactly where I'm spending and what categories am I spending the most, which can be helpful. But for the most part, I liked her workaround of what she does instead of being mindful.
Yeah.
And that's really the ultimate bottom line common denominator is knowing how much you can spend in certain areas and being mindful about that. Impulse buying is just too easy nowadays.
Yeah, because for a lot of people, they use apps as an excuse. Well, I have these apps so I don't have to think about my money. And really, apps mm-hmm. should allow you to think about just the important parts of your money.
And sometimes they're counterintuitive. Like I had, I want to say it was Mint that I had the app and it gave me a notification that there was a multi-hundred dollar charge on my card, and I go and look at it and it was the auto deduction for my utility bill.
Oh,
so it was, you know, it's some of that stuff is more distracting than it is actually helpful. So you just got to find what works for you, but definitely be mindful. And I think nothing beats a piece of paper and a pen and figuring out exactly what your budget is.
I got one more thing to ask both of you guys before I let this piece go. Greg, as I was reading through this initially, I immediately thought of you, but I also thought that you probably have some money savings habits or things people think are money savings habits, right? That didn't make the list, but that you've also given up that are there. You have another one that didn't make the list?
Don't drink alcohol.
Yeah.
it's boring and it's too simplistic that I can't stretch it out for another paragraph or two. But if you quit, the first thing you will notice, aside from the absence of headaches and hangovers, is how did all this cash get in my wallet?
Right, right. I love that. I love that in your book, which is available anywhere, right?
Yeah, but you want to buy it from Amazon.com.
Yes.
$7.
It's $7 now. I didn't know that.
Download. $6.95, in fact.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, we got our mention in, so that's good.
Take that nickel and spend it somewhere else.
But that is amazing because you go through the math on that in your book, and it's eye-opening how much money people spend on alcohol.
It's not eye-opening. It's sobering.
It's somewhat, but I'm pumped. He's here all week, folks. Niall, how about you? Is there something that you've given up that isn't on this list?
I think going back to the meal planning is the biggest one. Also, stuffing money in my shoe. I had to give that up. My money started to stink a lot, and it wasn't a good place to save it. So,
there's no way you're really doing that.
No. Maybe in the teenage years. Yeah. You know, when you're on your way to school, you go through the rough neighborhood. I'm going to put this in my sock.
Yeah, because nobody will find it there. And then nobody...
yeah, they'd never check.
Yeah, then you don't even want to touch it then. Yeah. Let's move on to our next article, guys, which comes to us from Barron's. And this caught my eye immediately. Stocks to watch. This is Wells Fargo. It says, buy now, ... or forever hold your peace. They talk about as part of KBW's ongoing August Opportunity Series, they're highlighting outperform rated Wells Fargo as an investment that we believe investors should be increasing while the opportunity still presents itself. Greg, you read articles like this one in a great publication like Barron's and think, I definitely got to go buy Wells Fargo today because the opportunity is going to go away.
Well, the moment you're pressured into thinking, yeah, the opportunity is not going to be there forever, that should be a huge red flag. And I don't suppose whoever wrote this has a position in Wells Fargo, at least not one that they disclosed. But just to look at the analytics of it, Wells Fargo is trading at a pretty historic low. It's a close to a two-year low, and it's trading at barely a dozen times earnings. It does get huge return on equity compared to most of its counterparts, especially the rest of the big four. But this is the kind of thing that you kind of have to look at yourself as opposed to waiting for somebody at Barron's who needs to fill column inches to figure out for you.
I love that. So you might use this as like the top of the funnel and then do your own homework after that.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, I did because I knew I was going to be on the show today.
Right.
And as was proved in 2007, 2008, the unfortunate truth is that federal regulators of either party are not going to let Wells Fargo fail. It's unfortunate, but we're looking at how to profit here rather than how to make the world work more fairly. So yeah, given that if it loses money, it'll be propped up and most likely, and given that it is trading at a small multiple, yeah, why not?
Now, I can't imagine that you and your dad, who's also your co-host on the show, and you guys have a ton of fun together, by the way.
My dad's dead too. Oh, you're not talking to me.
No, I'm not. Yeah, I'm going to talk about all your dead relatives and pets, Greg. Greg's going to wonder by the end of the show what the hell
we're going to dark places here, guys.
I guess so. But now your dad's not deceased because I heard him on the show. And
yes, he's alive and well.
That's right. And you guys, I'm sure when you're managing money for people, the first thing you're not doing, tell me the first thing you're not doing is going to Barron's and going, oh, KBW says this is a buy.
Oh, no. And it's funny looking at this headline. It's such a clickbait headline to me. And it feels like such a lazy part by the journalists who put it together, because they put together this clickbait headline, says buy now or forever hold your peace. And then it's basically a giant quote that they pulled from another article from another website. Right. So it's definitely something that I would look at. And I think it's a great spot to kind of the tip of the iceberg, like you were saying, about finding your information, but really digging through it. I think there is something to be said about looking at different sectors in the market that have been negative for a certain amount of time. Financials have been hammered. Maybe it's time to start looking at individual positions. So I do think there is validity to it. But when you start looking at the echo chamber of, you know, headlines that are coming out, it seems like financials are getting nothing but positive news coming out every day. And that worries me as just kind of someone who takes things with a grain of salt as far as what the mainstream media is feeding me.
Yeah.
So we definitely don't have CNBC going all day long thinking about, you know, chasing the momentum in the market. But I think there is a fair sentiment to look at pockets of the market that have been negative for a certain amount of time and thinking about when is our entry point. And Wells Fargo might be compelling, but it's not going to convince me based off this copy and paste article.
Right. When you and your dad are doing your asset allocation for clients, I'm curious, you know, I was asking Greg about this might be the top of his funnel. Generally speaking, what's the top of your guys' funnel? You use a tool like Morningstar or something?
We'd use Morningstar. I mean, we have great strategic partners that are, you know, mutual fund wholesalers that a lot of people have gotten familiar with in the financial services industry. So it's meeting with the actual fund managers and the PMs for a lot of these mutual funds. It's doing our own research. We have, you know, great relationships with analysts across the board. So it's getting direct conversations going constantly. But there's also great mainstream stuff that we can find. I love a lot of the work that LPL Research has done. Even though we're not affiliated with them, we'll still use them. Or yeah, getting on finance Twitter and seeing what favorite guys that I'm following that I know are managing great amounts of money, what are they talking about, and kind of following that rabbit hole. But getting all this information, disseminating it, and then having your own tone and your own feel about it by doing your own research is ultimately the best play.
It's funny you talk about mutual fund wholesalers because, you know, a lot of times people listening to this might go, oh, well, those people are selling their own funds. And I'm sure if you guys manage your practice the way that I manage mine, I had a few people that I relied on because of the fact that they wouldn't come into my office and hot crap. They'd really just add value.
Yeah. And you sort them out. Yeah. I mean, as time goes on, I don't have time to meet with all the mutual fund wholesalers, but there are a few guys that add tremendous value, and they're really consultants to the advisor to help them grow their business. And I've had a lot of guys that are agnostic that say, hey, I don't have a muni bond fund, but I know so-and-so does. You should talk to them. It's going to be a great play or something like that. There are good guys out there, but they have taken a black eye. So that's fair.
Sure. Right. Greg, what is the top of your funnel? I said this might be when you said that, yeah, you looked at this and Wells Fargo might be good, but I'm sure this particular article is not what you generally use. How do you determine what goes into your portfolio?
Well, I'm one of these obsessives or whatever you want to call it, who just goes on Yahoo Finance every morning and plays with the bond tracker and plays with the stock tracker. I want to emphasize, I am not doing this because I'm shopping. I'm doing this because it's what I like to do.
Right.
It's a progression from reading the sports section back when newspapers existed. Mm-hmm. So that's all there is to it. 99 times out of 100, probably more than that, nothing will catch my eye.
So it starts off as fun and might end up in investment.
Exactly. Yeah. As a matter of fact, we can go overboard. I watch the Fox Business Channel during the day. I have it on in the background. Fox Business Network, excuse me. Fox News is the channel. Fox mm-hmm. Network is Fox Business is the network. Right. The moment they talk about, ooh, big IPO coming up for Visa or Facebook or Alibaba or whatever, that's when I immediately lose interest.
You're
the ship has sailed.
Right. You're done. Hey, got to take a quick time out from this awesome discussion with Niall and Greg to say a big thanks to everybody who's gone to Magnify Money using our link, stackybenjamins.com/magnifymoney. You know, people will drive across town to save 10 cents on gas, or they'll shop for jeans at 5 different stores. Why wouldn't we shop for the products that allow us to be financially secure? You know, instead we just walk into a bank and say, hey, what have you got? You know what you find out? You save a heck of a lot more money on having the right financial products than you will through just saving a little money on jeans or on gas. StackyBenjamins.com/magnify money is the place to go for better checking account options, savings accounts, and debt strategy products like consolidation loans or better credit cards that fit your lifestyle. Use Magnify Money for more comparison than any other site on Earth. Over 92% of the stuff is there. And then what you'll notice is if it's student loans or personal loans that you're looking for, Magnify Money rates SoFi as number one. Less fine print, more options, more flexibility. StackingBenjamins.com/SoFi. It's S-O-F-I. So on your trip to Magnify Money, make sure that you look at SoFi and compare their rates, and you'll be another happy SoFi customer. StackingBenjamins.com/SoFi. All right. We have a great fintech discussion for you. You know, once again, we do not endorse any of the companies that we have on the fintech segment, but we certainly love talking about what's coming out. And we've got a really, really interesting one. When I first heard about M1 Finance, well, first thing I thought, which is always great, how come nobody's thought of this before? And then second, I thought, man, that's a little bit of a bear to put that together, but how cool. So let's help you learn more. Welcome Brian Barnes from M1 Finance down to the basement. And Brian Barnes from M1 Finance joins us in the basement. Welcome, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, you've been a busy guy lately, haven't you?
We have been, me and my team.
Yeah, that's exciting. So M1 Finance, before we get into exactly what you do, was it an issue that you were trying to solve for yourself? Like, were you frustrated with the way investing happens now, Brian, or did you look for an opportunity in the market? What was the genesis for M1 Finance?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think, you know, the initial problem came for how I manage my money and the pain points that I experienced. But I figured if I'm experiencing these pain points, it's very likely that other people are as well.
And so let's talk about exactly what you guys do, because this is very unique. Talk about M1 Finance.
Yes, a brand new type of online brokerage. What we do is we allow you to online create, organize, and then automate an investment portfolio. And so, you know, most traditional brokerages are built sort of around the transaction model. You go in and you place trades, and it sort of forces you to do everything yourself. What we do is you can come in and set up what you want to invest in on a percentage basis, and it's all done graphically via a very nice intuitive interface. You can say, I want 10% in, you know, this stock, 10% in this ETF, and then we automate all the trades for you. So what we allow you to do is set up an investment portfolio, and then it becomes as easy to manage as a savings account. You just add money in, withdraw money, and all the trades are automatically placed for you.
What happens when those percentages get out of whack? Do you guys then rebalance it too?
Yeah, so the M1 algorithm sort of efficiently rebalances you as money moves in or out of the system. So let's say you have a, you know, slice of your portfolio that you want to be 10% of your portfolio. Over time, that may drift and become 8% of your portfolio. That will be an underweight security. When money comes into the platform, it'll automatically get put in that first. So it's always pushing you back towards your target allocations. But the user can log in at any time and rebalance with the click of a button.
That's well. So I can do it myself, I just have it automatically do it. Do I pay for each of those trades? How does that work?
Nope. So there's no commissions. We charge 0.35% per year. So $35 a year on a $10,000 account, and it's unlimited trading.
Wow. You talk about pies on your website and the idea that I can have multiple pies. Tell me what that's all about.
Yeah. So we view portfolios as a set of pie charts. So it's a very easy way to graphically represent what is your, you know, what your holdings are and how they're performing. And so you can, you know, imagine your top level pie chart as your holdings. Any slice of that can either be a single tradable security on New York Stock Exchange or NASDAQ. So it can be a single stock, an ETF, or it can be another pie chart entirely. So you could say, I want 10% to be in Apple, or you could say, I want 10% to be in tech stocks, and then have that be its own separate pie that you can sort of slice and dice as you see fit.
That's pretty wild. So I have five different pies, and one might be all my large cap investments, but that's a pie that's also being reallocated. But if that entire pie becomes more than, let's say it's 35% of my portfolio and I set the top line at 40, it'll rebalance all those positions inside that single pie?
That's correct.
Wow. It just gives me a headache thinking about how you guys built that.
Very talented set of engineers.
You found some great people. And you're in Chicago, right?
We are in Chicago.
Yeah, that's exciting. When people sign up, can they do this with their entire portfolio? You know, sometimes when there's new apps out there, IRAs aren't included. Can people do IRAs, non-IRAs, that all different types of things?
Yeah, so right now we only support individual cash accounts, so individual and joint accounts. We don't support any IRAs. But that's, you know, something that we're going to tackle in the near term in the next couple months.
Yeah, because obviously I think that's a spot where a lot of people would want that type of trading. And then tax reporting is always a bear that people work with. When you report taxes to people, what can they expect from you guys?
Yeah, so we, you know, aggregate all the information. We do the necessary reporting on our end. And at the end of the year, you'll get a consolidated 1099 form that, you know, accounts for wash sales and, you know, sort of all the unique tax laws that exist in the U.S. You'll also get a file that if you want to upload to TurboTax or TaxCut, it works with that as well. So easy to do your taxes and you get a consolidated form.
Is it just a browser-based or do I have an app on my phone as well?
Nope. We are native on iOS and Android.
Okay. I asked you about how you guys make money. What about privacy? I mean, everyone worries about making sure their things are private. What type of privacy fences have you guys built?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we're about a year old, which, you know, actually probably gives us a lot of benefits that a lot of the other brokerages are dealing with legacy systems where they're dealing with computers from the 1970s and trying to make it secure for this day and age. We were able to start with, you know, the latest and greatest. We started from a greenfield technology stack. You know, we basically utilize best practices across the board from security. We encrypt every piece of data that we have. We monitor access to no end. We, you know, we're sort of a digital Fort Knox in our privacy realm.
Yeah, I was actually reading recently, you know, they had the recent Delta problem with their entire system. And that was all because of legacy built on legacy built on legacy.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. What have you seen from your beta testers about people using this? Have you found any surprises, anything that really you went, wow, I didn't expect somebody to do that?
You know, I think we haven't experienced surprises from our end, but I think the users has experienced a lot of surprises that, you know, a lot of these people have used the traditional wirehouse brokerage firms to maintain an investment portfolio. It's just a very archaic way to do that. And so they're surprised at how easy it is and how inexpensive it can be. So, you know, we have a lot of people who sign up and create a, you know, take a template pie based on generally accepted investing principles, make that 90% of their portfolio, and then their 10% is sort of their fund picks. And it allows them to engage and participate in the markets that they otherwise couldn't have using the old methods.
Right. And also making sure at the same time, if I have a big win, that it's not overwhelming my entire portfolio.
Yeah, exactly. You know, most investment platforms are sort of just a data dump of information that's at you. And if you're in the industry, you get good at doing the ratio analysis in your head, but that's not how today's consumer wants to consume information. They want to see it graphically, make it understandable, make it intuitive. And I think that's what we've done with M1.
Are you trying to say everybody's not a money nerd? Is that what you're trying to say?
Unfortunately not.
And then two other things from your website. Every time there's more than $10 of cash in your account, it automatically gets swept into your portfolio.
That is correct. We take the standpoint that an investment portfolio is for investing, that there shouldn't be the concept of idle cash in your portfolio. And so we utilize fractional shares. So we can basically trade down to the penny in more or less any security. And so, you know, if you have $100 on the platform, $100 will be invested. If you have $1,000, $1,000 will be invested.
What's the minimum account opening size?
$100.
Okay. That's small. So the cool thing is part of your launch, you guys are going to help out some Stacking Benjamins people. That's pretty exciting. Tell us about your offer.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you go to sign up, m1finance.com or download the apps on the Google Play or App Store, you can sign up and use the promotion code Stacking Benjamins. There's no space in between those and we'll give you 6 months free.
Oh, that is awesome. Thanks for doing that, man.
Absolutely.
Good luck with the rest of the launch. I know this is a hectic time for you guys, and you've done mom proud, so congratulations.
Thanks.
We'll have a link to M1 Finance on our show notes page at stackingbenjamins.com. Thanks a lot to Brian for coming down to the basement. Isn't that interesting? Looking at individual pies, like if you've got your play pie, but you want to keep it diversified, then you've got the hull of the ship pie. You know, maybe your large cap, you want like 40% of your portfolio to be large cap. I don't know. I'm just throwing out a number. I'm not saying 40% is right for you. But you want that to be large cap, but you want it to be certain funds and then have that reallocate. Once again, makes me think, why hasn't somebody done that before? All right. Love to hear your thoughts about that. Let's talk about that in the green room. If you're not a member of our close Facebook group, stackingbenjamins.com/greenroom is where you'll find the link to that. We have some fun discussions in there. Last week, talked about budgets and about bill paying and had some great discussions about fried bologna and had a bunch of other chaos. So awesome. All right. Let's head back to our discussion with Nal Bear from Financial Time Traveler and Greg McFarland from Control Your Cash. Let's move on to our last piece, which we're going to have some fun again with Moneyologist from MarketWatch.com. We've done this a few times before. Here's the way we play this now. I'm going to read you the article to the Moneyologist. I've asked both of you guys not to read his answer and have you come up with it on your own. And like Linda P. Jones said a couple of weeks ago when she was on, she went and actually looked at Quentin Fodrell's answer and said that ours were better. Of course they were, because it's Stacking Benjamins. Come on. But let's go ahead and I'll read everybody the Moneyologist question. Here it is. My best friend from college and I are both recent graduates. She moved in with me a couple months ago. And ever since then, I've realized she's a financial idiot. She constantly complains about how she doesn't have enough money to buy food, go out for drinks, or participate in group outings. But she travels at least once a month to places like New York and Hawaii. Not to mention she spent 3 months in Europe after graduation. Even worse, she complains about not being included in group events and says she feels like she has no friends because of it. The thing is, I frequently invite her to group outings, but she's always out of town or won't go because it's too expensive. She was never like this before. She was the person who brought me cookie dough when my boyfriend and I broke up, who dropped everything to pick me up during a rainstorm, and who came to yoga at the crack of dawn with me before calculus class just so we could spend time together. She used to be such a giver. She doesn't straight up take food, but she guilts me into taking my leftovers. Also, our other roommate works at Square, and she takes advantage of her free startup meals. Now, my friend is so stingy with money that she can no longer be generous with her friendship. Instead, she guilt trips me for having a life outside of our friendship. She's turned into a total freeloader, and her constant fixation on how much things cost is a downer. Since I helped her negotiate her salary, I know what she makes, and it's a fair amount, but certainly not enough to fund monthly flights to tropical locales. I'm also cognizant of planning happy hours at places with $3 drink specials or organizing hikes where the only cost is chipping in for gas money to get there. I've broached the topic of fear of missing out with her multiple times and suggested the simple solution to building better friendships with people here is to be more present in our own city, but her actions still haven't changed. I'm more hesitant to bring up money issues because I'm worried I'll just come off as holier than thou. Her entitled attitude and uncompromising need for attention makes me feel like I want her out of my life. But she's my roommate and my former BFF. What do I do? Do I just ghost her? Do I tell her she's a financial idiot? Help. P.S. She's on a flight to Cancun as I write this, paid for in large part by another friend's frequent flyer miles, anonymous in San Francisco. Niall, what do you tell this woman?
Reading the question, I just felt like she was such a sucker. I felt like she was getting used. Like her friend's on vacation and she's worrying about it and her friend's probably not worrying about it at all. It feels like it's a conversation where you have to sit down and say, look, this is how I'm feeling. Obviously, if it's someone you care about, right? You have to say, look, this is how I feel. I feel like I'm being taken advantage of. That has to stop. But it sounds like her friends are enabling that environment to continue on. And so, I don't know. I'm a huge person about lead by example. So if she's continuing to act in a way that you want your friends to act, I think it's a great example for your friend to do it, especially if you don't want to have that holier-than-thou conversation. It's very clear how I live my life is what do I expect, you know, teaching people how you want to be treated, et cetera, et cetera. But I definitely felt like you're a part of the problem here. And until you start drawing the lines in the sand on how you want to be treated by, you know, not taking advantage of all my extra leftovers, which I enjoy so much, it's going to continue to happen.
Right.
Maybe introducing the magic compound interest to them. That could change lives. You never know.
That's right. The rule of 72. All of a sudden we'll open her eyes. That's right. Yeah, that's good. So don't be an enabler is your answer.
I think that's a big start to the conversation. When you start to say no, people want to say why. And that could open up the conversation to, well, why do you feel that way? Okay, maybe there's something deeper because there's been a huge change psychologically in her friend. She said it used to be the outgoing person, the one who woke up and went to yoga, the one who meditated with her, you know? And
she brought now her cookie dough.
Yeah, something's going on. Something's going on. Maybe we need to hear the other side of the story. Maybe the other friend might be saying something different.
Maybe.
Because they're enjoying life.
Good point. And you know what? I've been on the show long enough with Greg McFarland to know Greg thinks you haven't been nearly harsh enough. So, Greg, what do you think?
Uh-oh.
This is why, even though it made little financial sense in the short run, I lived on my own right out of college, and paying for two halves of rent was exhausting and frustrating. but having a roommate like this would have been more so, especially if she was a financial idiot like the person referenced here. Now, two-part answer. Let me start with the standard disclaimer. This letter is as fake as anything Dear Prudence has ever received. Cookie dough when my boyfriend and I broke up, picked me up during a rainstorm, came to yoga. What, if any, romantic comedy movie cliche are we missing? I think we nailed them all.
Hey, Greg. Then, Greg.
Yes.
Her friend is Ryan Gosling.
Who shares frequent flyer miles with a friend, especially since the friend is probably the same poor student demographic, especially since the airlines charge so much to transfer miles to another account? This letter reeks of bullcrap, but you didn't ask me to verify it. And another friend invites her to her workplace, Square, which presumably has security just to eat her lunch. Come on. But assuming that the letter is true.
Right.
The one thing the letter writer doesn't mention is whether the friend is paying her share of the rent or not. And if she wasn't, I assume that would have been the opening line. And if she isn't, who the hell cares? Isn't that the only truly egregious example of freeloading from a roommate that she should be concerned about? This complaint is about ancillary, unimportant, and not even really financial stuff. My friend complained. Sorry, go ahead.
Sure, well, I'm just saying, Greg, I hear what you're preaching. She's got her feelings hurt.
My friend complains that she feels left out. Who freaking who? But she's flying to Europe and Hawaii. I'm not sure what the roommate's problem is. And I mean that literally. I don't understand what her problem is. It sounds like she wants to run in two circles, which again, isn't a financial issue.
No, that's what you're saying. The friend's off having fun and she's not.
Yeah, exactly. It sounded like she's worrying about it, but definitely the friend's not worrying about it while she's on a plane to Cancun.
The friend, yeah, go to Hawaii with her, but you probably weren't invited.
The friend's like, how awesome is this? Everybody's letting me use their stuff, and I don't got to hang out with that whiny person that wrote that letter. It's so great.
You could get another letter. Hey, I have a friend who's super judgmental and writes letters to personal finance bloggers about me.
You should.
What do I do?
You should write that one to Mr. Moneyologist, Greg.
Now I know where to find him.
See, that's right. All right. I think it's going to wrap up another thrilling episode. And as promised, we taught absolutely nothing on today's show. So I'm feeling good about that. Greg, what's going on with you, man? What's happening in Investopedia? You back writing again or are you still on hiatus?
Still on hiatus. Still enjoying
Excellent.
It. I'll be back and you'll appreciate it.
You're going to drop the mic with your first thing, I'm sure.
I think I just might.
Niall, thanks a ton for joining us.
Thank you. This was a blast.
Tell everyone. I didn't know it was going to be guys' night. I did not know that Paula was at Burning Man, but we had a blast. So tell everybody about your show, which hasn't been out that long. Congratulations on the show, by the way.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we're pretty new. I think we just recorded episode 9, but episode 4 just rolled out yesterday. But basically, the concept of financial time traveling is achieving your goals at a faster rate. It's not actually Marty McFly and Doc getting in the DeLorean and going back in time. But it's manipulating the emotional time because capital doesn't understand the way that time works. You can make a fortune or lose a fortune in a day. So it's talking on subjects about that in the personal finance as well as overall investing, alternative investments, all sides of the board. But it's going to be a fun thing. We're rolling out the podcast, rolling out videos. We're writing every day. So it's a journey and adventure. We have some challenges, but it's a great time. And I'm excited to see where it's at a year from now.
Well, the cool thing, the hook for me is that you and your dad speak to kind of different groups. I mean, you speak to more millennials and he's speaking to baby boomers. And because of that, there's a little bit of something for everybody in your show.
Exactly. It's a great contrast. People ask me all the time, what's your niche? And with my father involved and myself, that's why we wanted to team up, is because he can, like you said, he can cover a generation that's a little bit older, or maybe the millennials want to hear the credibility from an older guy who's been in the industry for a while. And then the older guys want to hear what the younger guys are thinking. So it can go back and forth. And of course, I can step up and challenge him and he can challenge me in the only way that a father son can. So it's a good time with the banner.
I was going to say that too. You stand up to your old man a little bit, man.
Oh, yeah, we have a good time. We have a good time. We'll arm wrestle.
That's right. Well, thanks for being on. And we'll have links to Niall's show on our show notes at stackybenjamins.com. Thanks for playing, guys.
Thank you.
Oh, that's going to do it for today's show, everybody. Hey, we are in the middle of a game. And if there's any awkwardness that you heard at the beginning of the show or in the show notes or in the title of the show, well, guess what? You might be on to a clue of this week's game. The way we play it is this is the third clue, third Friday in our game. I play this because OG's not here on Friday. I'm entertaining myself and bringing you along with me. Take that awkward clue. Take the clues from the last couple weeks that may also be awkward clues. Start putting those together and maybe you're onto what the game is. We don't tell you what the game is. You got to figure that out. And then you have to write me, Joe at Stacky Benjamins, with not only what the game is, but also solve the puzzle. So that's it. Joe at StackyBenjamins.com. And this week, you might have enough to solve it. Next week, you definitely will have enough to solve it. But this week, you very well might have enough. So that's what we had this week. Let's talk about what's coming up next week on the show, because, man, do we have a great week. On Monday, the Club Thrifty team is here. Actually, we got a lot of people coming down to the basement on Monday. But the stars of the show are Greg and Holly Johnson from Club Thrifty. They went on a timeshare tour. And, of course, we've heard all kinds of nastiness about timeshare. So what was their experience? Well, they're going to tell us the story on Monday. Also, in our headlines, you know, there's this big scandal going on at Wells Fargo where a bunch of people had accounts opened up in their name. They didn't open them. Wells Fargo opened them and then charged a lot of people fees on a bogus accounts. How about that? Well, Nick Clements from Magnify Money is going to come down. As you may know, he's worked in the credit card industry for a long time, has been a credit card insider, so he can talk about exactly what happened and kind of what the fallout's going to be. And then a recurring segment that we're firing up here, Jamie Wise from Buzz Indexes. You can buy the Buzz Index at ticker symbol BUZ. Jamie Wise is going to tell us about social media and investing. Once a month, we're going to talk about what happened in that index to see which companies have the most hot buzz and which companies have the most not buzz. And that fires up also in our headline segment. So lots of guests coming down on Monday. We're going to be cleaning the house all weekend to get ready for that. But for you, if you're looking for more Stacky Benjamins fun, Saturday, tomorrow, over on the Green Room podcast, which is a separate feed, also a free show available for you to subscribe to, whether it's Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, subscribe to the Green Room, and you will get a vintage episode tomorrow, but also Tuesday's episode, hilarious, OG, talking about some stuff that happened in the Stacky Benjamin show. That's our behind-the-scenes show where we kind of talk about the making of this show. So if you want more, every Tuesday and Saturday, Green Room episodes go off on that feed. All right, that's going to do it. We'll see you over in the Green Room tomorrow or see you back here on Monday, Stacking More Benjamins. Talk to you later. Bye.
This show is the property of SB Podcast, LLC. The show is created by Josal Sihai, produced by Richie Rutter Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. Greg McFarlane appears courtesy of Control Your Cash. Special thanks to Niall Bayer for joining us. You'll find Niall's podcast, Financial Time Traveler, wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll also have a link at our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. Special thanks to Joe's mom for letting me host the guys here in the basement for this weekend's college football games. Time to get the hot tub running. Nothing like hot tubbing with a bunch of dudes while watching college football. My favorite. See ya.
What was that? It's called the medium sketch.
The medium sketch?
Yeah, it wasn't rare and it certainly wasn't well done.